direct from the web, it's Billy Masters Live.
Ooh.
And now, please welcome your host, Billy Masters.
Oh my God. Everyone always sounds so happy when they introduce me. If they only knew. Hello, welcome to Billy Masters Live. I am looking for, is my mic on? Yes, it is on. Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure because I can't see my screen as well as usual. Oh, there it is. Okay, good. So welcome to Billy Masters Live. I am, of course, your host, Billy Masters. And today is somebody going to tell me what day it is? Oh, my God, it's Thursday, April 29th. Oh, my God, the time is flying. Can I tell you, it's Boston and it was like 70 degrees yesterday and now it's like 40 and it's pouring and it's miserable out. I had to take my sweaters back out. Granted, not much of a sweater. Oh, my God. So I just found out I'm going to a wedding next month of a New England Patriot. All right, well, really not a Patriot, but a New England Patriots cheerleader. Doesn't that make much more sense? But there's going to be Patriots there. So I've already asked how many people I'm allowed to sleep with at the wedding, and I was told none. The reception, however, they didn't mention. So anyway, I'm getting ready for this wedding. Anyway, it was the Oscars this past Sunday. And when I think of Oscars, I thought to myself, you know, I'm a gay man. I think of Bruce Valanche when I think of the Oscars. So I thought we'd have like a few people from different walks of life. And of course, Bruce has written 9 million Oscars and also appeared on some Oscars and slept with some people named Oscar, as a matter of fact. And Richard J. Alexander is a producer, director, bon vivant. And Johnny Beauchamp is a young, up-and-coming actor. So I thought it's different walks of life. It's like The View. I always wanted to do a show with men of different ages and backgrounds who I haven't slept with. That's the kind of show I do. But before I get to the guests, I want to tell you about the first Oscars I ever went. Oh, my God. Can I just tell you, I don't want to show the number, but who's calling me? Bruce will appreciate this. Jennifer Lewis is calling right now. I can't talk. Jesus God, you know, this is my life. You know, that's when you know you've got a gay man. You're doing a show with Bruce Valanche and Jennifer Lewis calls and interrupts. Doesn't get gayer than that. Anyway, the first Oscars I ever went to, and Bruce can check my dates. I think it was 1988. And so I'm like, let's see. I would have been 19. Oh my God, I was 19. I was just in college. And I wanted to go to the Oscars. Now, how does a young gay boy in Boston who isn't doing anything, I'm just a college student. So I started, because you know, they always say that they never had enough seats for everybody who wanted to go to the Oscars. So how did I get in? So I started calling the Academy months in advance. And I would basically talk to people in every department. And eventually I ended up, I didn't know who he was at the time, in the department of Otto Spori. Now, Bruce knows who Otto was. Otto, see, he's nodding vigorously. Otto was like the, oh God, he basically made sure that if there was ever a problem with the Oscars, it fell on Otto. He was like the chief accountant of Hollywood and the numbers guy, and he knew everything. I don't know how this happened, but I got in touch with Otto's secretary who said, yeah, how many tickets you want? I don't know how this happened. I don't want to say her name. She's retired. She may be dead. Otto's dead. In most of my stories, the people are dead, which is why I can tell them. So anyway, I thought I was going to go to the Academy Awards and like have to meet somebody in an alleyway and exchange some cash. It was so cheap. I can't even tell you how cheap it was. But anyway, so this was when it was at the Shrine. So I went, I don't know, seven. I did go a couple times down at downtown, but I liked the Shrine. I was very fond of the Shrine. Anyway, The first person I met was Audrey Landers. I believe that's Audrey. Whoever was in A Chorus Line. She's going to be on this show, by the way. Oh, I have to return her call. She doesn't want to be on with Judy. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, Audrey Landers I met. Look how young I was. And this is back when I smiled really broadly and didn't realize that it looked like half of my face had had a stroke. So anyway, and then I'm walking down the hallway and who do I see running? Oscar nominee, Sally Kirkland, who I would later become good friends with and sometimes watch on Facebook chanting in Hindi. This was, of course, long before that when she was just an actress. Anna. That was her big movie, Anna. Anyway, I love the Oscars. But here's what I have learned over the years. You can't win doing the Oscars. There is always something to complain about. Nobody, I don't think there's ever been an Oscars where everybody said, what a show. Maybe that first time with Billy Crystal. Maybe. And I'm sure somebody was left out of the in memoriam then. But I don't need to know these things because I have my first guest, Mr. Bruce Valanche.
Come on. Oh, hi.
You're on. Hi, darling. How are you?
Hello. I'm on StreamYard, so everything is reversed. Let's fix the
I back. Know. You and me both. I hate that. Do you remember Otto Spori?
Do I what?
Remember Otto Spori? Of course you do.
Yes, oh, I loved Otto. He was funny. He was the keeper of the flame. He was a seating guy.
Well, this is how I got in.
Right. And I don't know what he did for the Academy the rest of the year. They dreamt up something for him to do. But that he was the biggest deal. He was the guy who would come around and actually hand you your ticket. He would give them personally. Everybody, staff on the show.
And even me, I had to go to the Academy on Friday afternoon to pick up my tickets in his office that on the Wilshire location. So, I mean, right. I remember it all.
Okay, I'll stop there.
That's all right. You're fine.
That was where, well, you know, bang. that's all true. That was the year before I started writing the show. That was
The
year that if Sally was up, it was the year that Cher won.
Yes, it was.
It was 88. It was
88. Okay. So you started in 89.
I did. That was the Alan Carr show.
That was a disaster.
Until just this week was considered the worst Oscar show ever.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that.
The Franco Hathaway show. Both of which I wrote.
Yes, exactly. I remember.
And those are now, they have been put in the shade by this week.
Well, you know, I just remember the Alan Carr show. I met Lucy, and it was like days before she died. And that was the year they brought out, I think it was Lucy and Bob Hope, brought out like the stars of tomorrow.
That's correct.
Because I met, I met like everybody that year. That was a fun year as an audience member. Maybe not watching at home, but it was a lot of fun there because all the old stars were there, like really old, and a lot of young stars.
The opening number. He trucked them in from the country home in Woodland Hill.
And somebody, an old, was it Sid Charisse dancing?
Sid was dancing with Tony Martin.
That's right.
Her husband. And they were next to next to Alice Faye, who was Tony Martin's first wife. It was a great moment of geriatric Hollywood trivia.
Did Otto Spori set up that seating?
That was Alan. That was all Alan.
Was there a year that you worked on that people didn't complain about the show?
No, I mean every year. As I've said to people many times, Gil Case produced 17 of the shows.
Yes.
He actually came on board the year after the Alan Carr show. And in Gil's office, which was moved wherever there was this production office was every year, in his office, on either side of the wall behind him, were like David Copperfield and Andrea Martin lurked behind me. But literally on either side, he had a review, a page frame from the New York Times, and the other side was a page frame from the L.A. Times. And the New York Times was a rave love letter review. And the LA Times was a blood-curdling fan of the same show.
There you go.
Each one had watched the broadcast, and they had diametrically opposed opinions of it. And he had that hanging behind him to remind people that you can't win.
Right.
Nobody wins.
No.
I mean, no matter what happens, somebody loves it and somebody hates it. And there are the death reel, which is something that Alan Carr started on that in 89.
Oh, was he the first? I didn't know that.
He was the first. Yeah, it never occurred to them to look back.
Boy, what a mistake that was.
It occurred to him because he looked back constantly. But yeah, that was his, a lot of the things. He eliminated saying, and the winner is. He invented, and the Oscar goes to.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Which maintains to this day. And he and Jeff Margolis, who directed the show, that was actually Jeff's idea, and Alan incorporated. Alan built the green room backstage.
I remember the green
room. Alan invented the red carpet with Fred Heyman from Giorgio Beverly Hills.
No red carpet beforehand. It was just Army at the pavilion.
Throng in, and they would have a camera crew going around, and they would tape entrances, and there would be an opening montage of people getting out of cars.
Right,
but there was no pre-show. Alan invented the pre-show.
Wow,
and which of course, when cable came in, cable was in already, but they seized on it, and it became a big revenue stream for E.
Sure, and that was Joan.
Joan Rivers, all that stuff, that all came out of Alan. So in addition to doing the worst Oscar show of all time, he came up with all these innovations that are still in use 25 years later.
Which goes to prove what you said is that, you know, it's never all bad. There are things that come out of it. Exactly. And, you know, nobody ever gives Alan credit. So I'm glad you've told me. I never knew that.
The death reel, which we called at one point the light show. Except the year of the Scorsese picture, we called it The Departed, became a thing at the Academy. It became a big political football at the Academy. But they for some reason, and this may have changed, this, because everything changed, but they decided there would be 32 names. Where they came up with that, I don't know. There may have been more this year. But
there were.
And they were divided among the branches. And it was kind of like the House. The branch that had the most members, the actors branch, got to put the most names, which was convenient for the television audience because the actors were the ones who know. But every branch got to submit people, and that was why there would be a publicist, there would be a sound engineer, there would be all the... Now, all those publicists and sound engineers and producers are in there at the expense of somebody's favorite star who died.
Right.
Like, they are at the expense of Jessica Walter, who didn't make it in effect, or Naya Rivera, who didn't make it.
Right.
Although I don't know her film credit that much.
It is minimal. I looked it up.
I mean, I remember getting this out. How could they forget Bea Arthur? Well, she made like two movies. I mean, how could they forget Farrah Fawcett?
Look, right.
Not a movie star. I mean, you know, that's the People's Choice Award.
Exactly.
Or
the Golden Globes, which is more all-encompassing.
The Golden Globes is, you know, it's 89 wine stewards and valet parkers pretending they're journalists while they study for their real estate license.
You know, but speaking of that, there is all of this talk that because of this year, the Golden Globes could be finally on their way out. What do you think of that?
I don't think they'll be on their way out. They have a year to make a lot of big amends. Mm-hmm. There will have some big changes within the 89 wine stewards and valet parkers. That's the first thing. They'll have to find a couple of black ones, and they may have to find a couple of legitimate journalists, and they may have to lay back on the freeloading because it exists for the freeloading.
Of course.
I think that they can. It's too big a revenue stream to ignore. I mean, it's not just for them. But for Dick Clark,
for the entire industry,
it from the beyond,
yes,
productions, and for NBC, I mean, it, you know, it, traditionally the second highest rated of the award shows after the Oscars. So it represents, it's a big night. And not to mention the trickle down, the hotels, the caterers, the limo drivers, the security people, the other parties that happen away from Beverly Hills as promotion for the Oscars, basically. All of that, I mean, that's a huge economic stimulus. So it's not going to go away that fast.
Yeah, and regardless of what they say about the SAG Awards or any of the other award shows, Independent Spirit, they're never going to be able to compete, I don't think.
Of course not. Well, the Independent Spirit Awards are for movies that nobody used to see at the Sunset Five. There are now movies that nobody watches on Netflix.
So, and this was the Oscars as well.
Well, this year, only this year. The Independent Spirit Awards is a tiny little thing, and it's like the hipster awards, but it's basically there to promote your independent movie into Oscar triumph. And SAG, I wrote the first SAG Award, and I've always been amazed that it's never gotten ratings. Nobody watches it, but it's got all the actors in the world. It's got
which
all the stars.
Allegedly are the people that people at home want to see, and yet they don't watch.
I think they just kind of don't. They don't basically get what SAG is, because it's it's a union, and the glamour of it has 25 years later, it still hasn't happened.
I think if a network got behind it rather than TBS or something, maybe people would.
Well, we did it for NBC and they dropped it. They dropped it, I think, after the first year because the number was so low. I mean, they were stunned at how low the number was. And Ted Turner picked it up for his TBS and TNT because it was cheap. Like he picked up the Golden Globes when CBS dumped it after the Piazzadora scandal. And then it came around again. Dick Clark seized it and took it to NBC. But Ted Turner, it's a big item. Not running things anymore, but for now, it's all owned by the phone company.
Right.
So for the phone company, if they give a rat's ass, it's a display item you put in the window.
Right,
because
that's
have a whole lot of that on TNT and TBS because essentially they exist for network reruns. You know, right. Supernatural keeps them in business.
And Rizzoli and Isles.
Maybe.
Might be USA.
Or Lifetime. I think Lifetime grabbed them.
Oh, you know, it would fit
with the Lifetime. I surf a lot, and that's the only reason I'm there. The thumb is on, I'm looking.
Oh, I know where your thumb has been. All right. So since we're going to talk about this year's Oscars, let me bring in the rest of our panel. We have director and producer and former actor, although I bet he'd act if anyone asked him. Richard J. Alexander is here.
Oh, my God. Richard J.
Bruce, how are you? I love you so much.
Thank you.
Did you see him in Hairspray on Broadway?
Of course. Please. I saw his first public performance. I was at the dress rehearsal.
I was so fangirling out for him. I thought he was terrific. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
And we also have up-and-coming actor, who I love so much, who I met through, well, he's coming, is Johnny Beauchamp. Hey, Johnny.
Hey.
What a nice surprise. Hi, Johnny.
I just got your text message, but I'm on the phone, so I was like, I don't want
to
mess up.
I said, we're going to be on the same show. I might have to say good things about you. I love this.
Please. I met him through Richard J., if I'm not mistaken.
Was that the Dream Girls reunion?
The Dream Girls anniversary.
Yeah.
And I introduced him to, was it Cheryl? I introduced you to Cheryl. Yeah. You met Jennifer on your own somehow.
At the party and Wilson Cruz and everybody. That was a great night.
Yeah, it really was. Anyway, okay, so
Bruce,
we all know each other.
By the way, all that stuff you just talked about, I knew none of that. How fantastic to learn all that.
Oh, well, you know, I am a cesspool of information.
I miss
trivia and facts.
Did you love the doc on Alan Carr?
I'm in the doc on Alan Carr. I kind of narrated. which was not the idea, but when I saw how they cut it, it was, I was kind of like a lynching in it. Mm. Yeah, I think it's a great documentary. Is that aside from that? So.
Yeah.
Well, let me just
lived a million lives. We've been around for a long time. We've lived so many different lives, like so many different periods.
I had dinner last night with Miss Midler, and we were speaking of you. Yes. We were talking about live shows that we have done over. You know, I've been working with Bette Midler for 50 years. Mm-hmm. I'm having a stroke, and we had dinner last night. We were reviewing 50 years of because I don't know that there's another show that she wants to do ever. She's having such a good time not working.
Yeah, they're gonna do Hocus Pocus. Well, she's earned it too, right?
Richard Gay directed a couple of it. To Kiss My Brass, was that you?
Kiss My Brass, that was my story. Yeah. And one of the joys, and you came, and you were so complimentary. But you know, it's a joy to work with somebody so wildly talented, and you know, corral all of that. You know,
she's unbelievable energy. That has
all right. Well, let us get back to the Oscars. I'm going to start.
You put quite a group together, Billy.
I know.
Oscar police. Yes.
Well, I actually want to start with Johnny, who is the youngest of us, because I want to know, what did you think of the Oscars this year?
Oh man, so let me tell you, Billy. Also, hi Bruce. I adore you. Hi, I can listen to you.
Thank you.
But. You know, I take the Oscars very seriously. Like, now my friends don't really want to watch with me anymore because I make everybody do a ballot, and I want, you know, you might win $20 or a drink or a joint or something, but to me it matters because I go and see every movie, and sometimes when it's not a pandemic, I'll go down to the, you know, the IFC and I'll see the shorts, I'll see the animated short, you know, because it's just a fun game for me. I mean, if we were all in sports, it's like the Super Bowl, right? So, like, even if you're into football or soccer, I mean, everybody tunes in. So this is like our, you know, this and Drag Race are basically like our sports events. So, you know, shit ducks down. And I was really on it this year. I saw I did good predictions. Like, I was pretty much on the money. But, you know, I got to tell you, I don't understand why we can never have, like, a political win or a win for an actor or an actress that's of color, but we can have kind of political wins for like white actors. And like, I thought if anything, Viola Davis had the political win. I mean, she is the, you know, I could go on and on about Viola Davis and why she should have won. I mean, a lot of black actresses and black actors, they don't get to do the transformation roles in a fat suit with makeup. They don't get that. And so I thought, what a powerful role for her to win for, you know, in lead, you know, it does mean something. And I thought for sure, man, that was going to go. And I love, who doesn't love Frances, you know?
Sure. But, no, I agree.
And she has four Oscars. I mean, she's one more. If she gets one more, she'll be five and she'll match Hepburn, you know, with the four in lead.
You know, I'm interested, Richard, because you're a director and you put shows together. Obviously, the Oscars banked on Chadwick Boseman winning, which is why they changed the order and wanted to end with him at the night, and it went to Anthony Hopkins. Was that a bad decision?
You know, it's funny. Does anybody know if that's actually a fact?
We don't know. It's all speculation.
Yes.
Yes. Bruce, yes. Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
They were expecting that the widow Boseman would get up and do a Mr. Right. Norman Maine speech.
Right. So, you know, it was a miscalculation on their part. You know, listen, I loved Anthony Hopkins. I hated reading all the fallout. I hated reading the comparisons. You know, the idea of this is better than that. He got robbed. So I don't know, you know, but I was hopeful because, you know, different people were running it. You had a film director in there, something like that. But, you know, my big thing is, you know, you're doing movies and there's no clips. So for people to, you know, be seduced and go, gee, that looks like something that would interest me. I didn't think it's what I thought it was. You know, I think that was a miss, you know, calculation. But, you know, I try not to judge too hard. And I really don't go on social media anymore about these things because it's a tumbleweed, you know, and you want to talk about not winning. You know what I mean? It's like, I didn't put anything up about Scott Rudin. I didn't put anything up about, you know, equity marching. It's like, there is a, you know, big shit show going on right now in so many categories. I'm watching things implode for a business that I love. I'm watching actors eat each other, you know, and communities eat each other that I love. And I don't know how everybody's going to come back to work and face each other. There's so much hurt and damage and fallout. And I mean it in the most loving way. My career is sort of in the rearview mirror. I can work as much or as little as I want. But all my friends who had their balls cut off mid, you know, to peak career, it's really, it's, I mean, Bruce, I think this is rough to watch. Do you agree?
Oh, it's insane. It's crazy. And, you know, and the left eats its young, no question about it. And a lot of keyboard warriors with time on their hands.
Yeah.
And they go after things. And the internet is narcissism central. You can.
I've seen a lot of people just go off on.
Everybody gets to publish their first draft.
Yeah, they're going off on tangents and rants. Listen, Johnny and I, for a couple of days, were fantasizing about projects, you know? It's like much more healthy than people destroying each other, you know? I don't know. It's been rough to watch. I'm hurt by the whole thing. I'm disheartened.
But having written 25 Oscar shows, I can tell you this was a piece of shit.
That brings up the question, Bruce.
For writing Oscar shows, this was a gigantic piece of shit.
Yeah. Bruce, would this have been?
And I respect that. I actually respect that based on your contributions through the years and all the changing fads and all the correctness, political or otherwise, you know?
Yeah, I'm curious, Bruce, now looking back on this or even beforehand, would this have been a year you would have wanted to even be involved in?
No, of course not. But I would have. It was what people said of the Schindler's List year to Billy. You're going to go out there and make jokes. He didn't do it, but Whoopi went out there and she didn't. We didn't. You can't make jokes about Schindler's List and set the tone for the whole evening. So it's not like this is the first time that they've been in a predicament. And we did a couple of Oscar shows the day after we invaded Iraq. They did the Oscar show. They postponed it a day because nobody was in the mood. And the day after Reagan was shot, they postponed it. People have had difficult times. And after, not the Oscars, but Ellen hosted the Emmys a week after 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So these are all, you know, it's not easy assignments, but that doesn't mean you don't do it. A conflagration of a lot of different things. I mean, the fact that there was also a pandemic and that there were the big ticket movies had been pushed out of release. So you were basically looking at a lot of sad art house movies, which Academy voters love. As you've noticed, they give awards to things like Shape of Water and Green Book and Moonlighting.
Bruce, yeah. Do not put those two films with Green Book in the same sentence. No, Green
okay,
Book
I will.
Is a horrible thing.
Green
Book makes white people feel good about themselves. So,
not in the but same it was, thing as Shape of Water and Moonlight. Okay, so that's all I had to say. Yours,
you know, so
what I'm saying is it was not a major release.
Right.
It was a minor film that got elevated by the Academy voter, as did The Shape of Water, and as did the what?
They've got adapted screenplay too, I believe.
Yeah, but I said elevated by Academy voters. It was not, in another year, it would not have been. They like those kinds of movies. Right. They like little art house movies. It's not what the public likes. The reason that they expanded this picture to 10 movies is when The Dark Knight Rises was not nominated because it was not to their taste, but it was a gigantic critical and box office success. They expanded the categories so they could include some of those, like Black Panther, which would not have been nominated if there were only 5 were up there. You're making faces, and I don't know why.
I'm just hearing you, and I'm like, wow. No,
I'm telling you the truth. This is the way it works.
I really hear you, as that's the truth, and it's just like, wow, yeah, but, I guess that's...
As far as the show goes, they made every possible mistake. They went to Union Station, and they didn't use Union Station.
Right.
They went to a side room, which looked like they had decorated the high school gym.
I agree.
It looked like they had put a temporary nightclub in there for the prom. And lamps on the table were the only lighting. You could not see the black people. The black people were in darkness.
This is not untrue.
It was black people could not make them out. They didn't put a trooper on them, nothing.
Well, that was number one.
Then they had Regina King walk through Union Station, which was a
And it did look like the open, like, Don't Rain on My Parade from Funny Girl, didn't it, Richard?
And within 30 seconds, she went George Floyd. She made a joke about if the jury had gone differently, I'd been wearing combat boots instead of high heels that I just tripped on. Funny joke, but the tune out began then.
Wow.
It was, oh, it's going to be that kind of an evening. We don't have a comic. We have an actress and she's doing political material. That was a huge mistake.
And probably
not. Look at the Nielsen ratings the tune out began immediately. For the next half hour, they did screenplay. You always open with an acting award so the audience sees somebody they know. There are only four fucking acting awards. You always open with one of them after you do the opening. No, they went to screenplay. So we got to hear tender origin stories about Aaron. The only people on the screen that were stars in the first half hour were Laura Dern and Regina King. For the first half hour of the show, there were no movie stars. They cut to people in the audience. They cut to nobody. Every cut was like the traditional cut to the director's wife that's always in the show. There's always one of those, and the producer's wife. And the
Bruce,
Academy
were you watching alone, or were you in company?
A small group of like-minded individuals.
Do you yell at the screen?
Oh, I was screaming. We were screaming.
Oh. Can I come next year to your house?
So anytime any tits were there, I said, whoa, look at those tits on Viola Davis. Look at those tits on Amanda Seyfried. Every time tits came on, I'd say, look, Angela Bassett, she had one of those three tits removed so that she's normal again.
Richard, you're a director. What did you think? Do you agree with most of Bruce's critiques?
I wish Bruce wrote an article the next day, because Bruce, I read everything that we all read. I don't think anybody is as succinct as you as to how to do it. There are just rules that you must abide by. He's right about the acting. He's, you know, like the Regina King joke. I don't know if that was written or it was ad-lib. I really don't, but it wasn't good. And it set a tone, and you're like, what is going on here? But I was confused visually and all that. First, it sounded like it was going to be a good idea. And, you know, because I thought the Emmys did a pretty good job. You know, you try not to judge all these award shows this year, but, you know, because they're trying to get through it. And, you know, look at the Tonys. The Tonys haven't even happened, and we've had two seasons go by. And, you know, and Danny Burstyn on social media the other day, and we all love him, gets his nomination in the mail. And it's like, you know, like, what? You know, it's like, what are they going to do? You know what I mean? It's
right.
Like,
I
forgot. I was
the Tonys are the only ones who didn't even try.
Well, they say they're going to, but we keep getting those coming in January.
It's a ticket-selling venture, right. And I get that. True. But then, Bruce, what I was actually going to ask you, if you don't mind, and Johnny, to your point, the fact that you left the house and went to the cinema, or maybe you did or didn't this year. Maybe, I don't know, was the animation other years you went to see, or this year?
This year, I didn't get to go to the cinema.
Did anybody go to any cinema to see even one movie?
I went to one movie on my birthday. I saw Mank in the theater.
You saw Mank in the theater, yeah. I didn't see one, and I think that's the other thing, Bruce. Everything was a little casual, right? Oh, I don't feel like watching this now. You put it on pause, you go eat, you get back to it Tuesday. That's not the way to watch films. Am I mistaken?
No, films are made... I think you're right.
I do the Film Society every year, you know, the awards, right?
At Lincoln Center, right.
Yeah, and Scorsese said something just fantastic 2 years ago, and he goes, I don't make content. I make movies.
Right.
And, you know, this whole idea of content, platforms. He makes movies. And I don't know. I just, like, involuntarily burst out from the wings. It was such a, like, overwhelming statement. You know, there's little guys out there. I make movies, you know. It's true. He makes movies.
You know, I'm curious, Johnny, because you are really the future of the industry. And you're still going out to movies. You're not one of those people watching things on your phone. You actually want the cinematic experience.
Really,
so
I can't even learn my lines on a phone. I get in trouble. It's like the last show I was on, I was like, you gotta send me the pages, or I'll just send me a printer. I'll print the pages. I need the pages. I need it in my hand. And,
you mean both? I have notes. I can't look at the screen. I have to print it out. I mean, but I'm 100.
Paper and pen, kids. Paper and pen.
I know.
Billy, I'm probably the worst person to ask about that though, because I don't even do with Richard. So like, I do not pause a movie. Like, if I'm watching a movie at home, I am watching a movie at home. There are no distractions. I might pause it to just like pick up the joint I just dropped, and I want to. You know what else? The only thing that's like non-movie about my movie watching is like I rewind like a motherfucker. I want to hear every single, you know, what did she just say? Did she just say pussy?
Yeah. Right. She may have, actually.
Or is that it?
No, it was Sharon Stone.
Like,
you know,
I religiously watch just because I want to really soak it in, and so especially because we can't go to the movies. I used to go to the movies like twice a week, three times a week. I'd see anything.
Yeah.
And then when now, do you guys remember the beautiful time of MoviePass, that like 4 or 5 month period?
Oh my God, I lived large for those 3 months. I went like seven times a week.
Ebbing, Missouri, like 4 times.
They made no money on me. Bruce, did you join MoviePass for those few months?
Oh, I did, and I gained 15 pounds off the popcorn. I made it up to them in the concession.
Right.
I couldn't believe it was happening.
I'm so much thinner now because I was at home, not eating popcorn.
I was at 10:30 a.m. on a Sunday. Like, I would go, you know, just to go to the movies.
Well, I really miss going to the movies, but it was enough of a panic.
You guys are losing the Cinerama Dome and that whole.
Well, maybe. We don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, really? What happened? What's the latest? I don't know.
Well, somebody put a bid on it. So I don't know. They want to keep it a cinema. I mean, we'll see.
There are other chains who are circling. I think a ploy to get a forgiveness, COVID forgiveness on the rent and people who own the building.
I'll never forget, that's where Sex and the City, the movie, opened, and I was in L.A., and that parking garage, and all you heard was big heels and martini shakers and Louis Vuitton purses, and, you know, because it was the first one. We all loved the series. And you could just hear all the heels in every single theater there. What's the complex called?
Arclight, I think.
The Arclight.
Every single cinema had Sex and the City. That's 2, funny. 2:30, 10:30, 11. And it was just fashion, and screaming. It was so much fun. Only LA is like that about
one
film.
Second, Johnny.
It's a phenomenon.
Johnny, go ahead.
I was just going to make you guys feel like shit. The first time I ever heard or saw the Cinerama, I remember it was the premiere of Evita. And I was obviously obsessed as a child. And I was just like, oh, what's this Cinerama? What's this? And I was like, thinking like,
I went to that premiere.
Really?
And the interesting thing was that the curved screen, they blocked it off, and they had put a flat screen in front of it.
Oh.
Because Alan Parker didn't want it. He felt that there was distortion when they showed it on that big screen.
Oh.
So for that first thing only,
I saw What's Love Got to Do With It was the first time I was there.
Right.
I'm older and I saw a lot of stuff.
But it was made for the Ben-Hurs and the Dr. Zhivago's, correct?
Right. Yeah. The last time I was there, they had Godzilla on the roof.
I remember that.
They put that thing of Godzilla bursting through the dome.
Oh, that's and cool.
And it was not this Godzilla, the last Godzilla. The
Broderick one, I think.
A later one where he destroys Honolulu, and it's got Peter Sarsgaard, not Peter, from the vampire from True Blood. That's he was in, I think, maybe Josh Duhamel, guys like that, and guys who I still don't know who Garrett Hedlund is. That kind of person. They were, and that was that Godzilla. It was Godzilla 2000.
Yeah, Godzilla 8.5.
He's bigger than that.
Well, Bruce, I have a question for you because one of the biggest moments of the Oscars this year, which I thought was so scripted and it really annoyed me, was this.
Well, there it is.
Oh.
And Bruce, there is. Charles. There is, first off, she looks like she's dislocated her hip. But there is a way to do this that it doesn't come off so contrived and scripted. Was that the problem with it, or is it just me?
Because it was contrived and scripted.
Well, clearly.
But the awful part is they went up to people who were at a table with a mic in their hand.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, and that stuff rarely works, and I always advise against it. Once in a blue moon, and that happened with Glenn, who saved it by actually doing the butt. I mean, because it was what she was doing was preposterous, and she knew it.
Right.
So she got it. I don't think that she was going to do it. I don't know that she was. It was probably left up to her if she wanted.
I think she practiced that butt. I don't think Glenn's walking around Connecticut doing the butt. Am I the only one?
In Montana,
private coaching.
Oh, Montana.
He's in Montana, where there's lots of room for butt.
Oh well, her butt could fit in
Montana. Look at anybody who lives there, and you'll realize that that's true.
Johnny, what'd you think?
Wide family.
It was just a bummer because I'm like a Spike Lee fanatic, right? So like when it played, I instantly was like, school days, no one's going to get this. And then Glenn knew so much about it, like
which made no sense.
I was like, why can't you just be like, oh, school days, it's the butt. Like, I would have believed you. But because it was so like, oh, this was in 1980. I remember Spike Lee. Da, 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 da. I was like.
I think that was the problem. She was overprepared that nobody bought it.
I was like, nobody saw school days when it came out. You didn't see school days.
I don't believe she has seen school days to this day. Richard, what do you think of it?
I think you're absolutely right, all of you.
I would say this. You underestimate Glenn.
Maybe I do.
She's very smart, and she sees everything.
Well, and she's down with the bitches.
She is very much.
She probably prepared. She probably watched and prepared like an actor.
No, I think she knows stuff. I think she knows who Spike Lee is, and she's seen his movies.
Don't forget, we lived through Summer of Sam. We lived through
this thing, and she played it like that because she was leading up to her dance. She knew once she did that, it would obliterate everything else.
Well, if she knew all of those fun facts about school days, then I tip my.
Oh, I don't know that she actually knew them all. I mean, it wasn't like she.
Johnny, she probably
she
picked
not,
up her
not
joint
know
too.
Them when she was handed the script. She knew about it. She'd seen the movie.
Right. She totally knew the lyrics to "Good Hair, Bad Hair."
Richard, do you think that really? The problem with the Oscars is in the direction, or is it in what they're trying to fit into a telecast?
I mean, I don't know. I think Bruce got at the root of the problem. You sort of can't win. Then there's tradition. Then there's, you know, you can't get the memoriam right. I just think it's a disease. Everybody thinks they can buck the trend. Times are changing. Audiences are being lost. You're confronted with a lot of things. All the awards shows are. And also, people can watch at their leisure. They can stream. They can come back. They don't have to watch it the night of. I don't really know that there's an answer. I think everybody tries, and everybody thinks they're going to ace it. But something that may sound good on paper, right, Bruce, just doesn't fly live.
Yeah. I mean, and also...
conceptually, you're trying to take care of everybody, and you end up satisfying no one. It's the same old...
You have to give out these awards. They won't drop any of the categories, so you're handed with how do you keep the thing going. And even the network doesn't want them to cut the categories because they sell advertising time. And the shorter the show is, the less money they make.
Yeah,
so
right.
it's about serving all of these masters.
Yeah.
But none of them are you, but that would change.
Remember when the Tonys, they divided them up and they put an hour on PBS, then you
the
went to
pre-show,
CBS.
Yeah.
Like they all tried to, it wasn't even a pre-show, it was they gave awards, but they didn't want to eat up the prime time. You know what I mean? So,
But I've written that show too, and that's a different beast.
Of course.
You know, the Oscars is unique because it's so big. And like the Super Bowl is the biggest football game and is different from all the other football games.
You know, I'm curious, Johnny, because you're young and you have a lot of friends that are in the industry and not in the industry.
Young.
I called you young, my darling. Yes. We have different generations.
Johnny,
do you
hear farting? Nobody knows.
I know, actually. Johnny, do your friends do? Is it relevant still to your generation, the Oscars? Because I always feel that this is something that it's aging out of the viewership.
I mean, it might be. It might be. I know that with me and my close friends, no one takes it as serious as I do, but they appease me at least and want to get together and have a champagne and, a little something and enjoy. But most people, it's like pulling teeth. Like, I would like, yeah, maybe next year I'll be in LA and there'll be like more Oscar parties and stuff. It'd be more fun. I think it's fun, but I got to tell you guys, the young people aren't really
the bigger part is the fashion and dressing up and all that isn't it? Like, who am I wearing? Going for your fittings, all the pre stuff. Some people can't remember who won the award, but they remember the green dress.
Yeah,
right. That's true. Yeah.
Also, but I think that there's a big divide between who young people want to win and who older people want to win.
Oh, that's interesting.
And because it's always the older people want wins. The younger people are getting more and more distrusting of the voters. And they're like, all right, well, again, we were going to have a black female leading lady, keep Halle Berry company for 20 years. Nobody. And then guess what? No, we just gave it to an older white lady again. Like, it's just like 19.
Well, but we did have an Asian director and a female director at that.
Let me just pray for that. They want a parade. For that. See, we gave it to a woman and she's Asian. Give her a parade. It's like, yes, and. It was like 1972 all over again. Diana Ross, Cicely Tyson, Liza Minnelli. Now, Liza, it was unbeatable that year, but for the purpose of my...
Well, therein lies the point, is that maybe it isn't about woman, black, Chinese, whatever. It's good. Bruce, you were going to say something to that point.
I was going to say, a lot of times it's about the movie. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is based on a flawed play, and it's a flawed movie. And it's got it won in hairstyling, makeup, and costume, because that's what's impressive about it.
Right.
The other thing were not as impressive when put against other things in that category. I mean, a lot of people thought Viola was over the top, and that the transformation was not as interesting a performance as an understated job that Frances would do. I personally would have voted for Andra Day. I thought she was knocked out.
I thought she was great.
From the thing to the end.
I agree.
I mean, the moment she held the screen for me.
One second,
I'm just agreeing with Bruce. I'm like, but in that category, I mean, Andra Day was extraordinary, but the film was not.
Well, that's an interesting point.
Part of the reason the film was a polemic, and I think a lot of people had the opportunity to turn it off, which they wouldn't walk out, they would turn it off.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of them just kind of left it because they were not interested in Billie Holiday and the feds persecuting Billie Holiday.
No, I was just surprised, and I thought Frances did a great job, but it seems like, if all the years of maybe Share the Wealth a little bit, I mean, I loved Carey Mulligan. I thought that was fun, the Independent Spirit Award winning performance. I thought Vanessa Kirby was wonderful. The first 30
minutes. Let me also say this, back to my original thing. A lot of them watched Nomadland. There was a buzz on Nomadland from a year ago when it won the Toronto Film Festival and Telluride Film Festival and became an Oscar contender off of that, because many of those festival movies get pickups and are seen by Academy voters who pay attention to them early.
And I think that's an interesting point.
There was a steady buzz for Nomadland, which won director, picture, and actress.
I think that what's important about that point is that
a lot of the people, the voters, watched the movie and liked it.
Yeah, I think that the people who
big awards like that means it got a high viewership from the Academy. Now, the Academy, obviously, today is not the old Academy. It's diverse. It's full of women. It's full of people of color. It's full of people who don't speak English. It's got all that stuff going for it it never used to have. So it's a much more diverse month and will continue to be so as they add more members to the thing.
Yeah, I think what I was going to say is that I think people forget that the voters are people who are plugged into the industry, obviously, more than the general public. So they know all these awards that it's winning around along the way.
And I like that the other awards that lead up to the Oscars, without being too boring, are mostly critics' awards.
Well, that's
the
true.
Actors give awards, the branches all give awards, which tell you where the Academy voting is generally going to go. But the Academy is made up exclusively of people who actually fucking make movies.
Right.
It's not critics. It's not real estate agents who are in the Golden Globe. It is people who make movies. And this is what they're looking at. These are these are the films that have captured their imagination. And there are from all disciplines in the movie business. But they're not outsiders watching the thing. And they're not people being interviewed outside the Walmart by Gallup to see who did you like in the movie. You know,
it's hard for me, Bruce. It's hard for me because all the critiques you have of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom was like really loud in Green Book, which won Best Picture. Like Green Book is one of the worst, it's probably the worst Best Picture ever. I mean, I haven't seen
really? All
of them. I'm trying to make my way through them. Green Book is pretty bad. Mahershala, transcendent.
Well, that's the point, is a bad film can have a great performance. It's very hard for great performances to make a film better.
I just feel like this year was if Ma Rainey had made it into the Best Picture category, which it did not, which is a huge deal. Like, if it's not in the Best Picture category, the acting awards probably won't be there.
Sure.
Deal. And I think I can't sign off on it. If Green Book got it and won, it seems like they're in the same branch, if not a little bit.
I beg to differ.
Yeah.
Green Book was voted by an Academy that had a far fewer Black people in it and far fewer young people in it. It was a white savior movie, and it was probably the last of the white savior movie. The voting membership of the Academy now is substantially different than it was then. And if they didn't dig Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, you can't, there's nothing you can say.
The old
parts who dug Green Book are outnumbered these days. Otherwise, you wouldn't have seen a lot of some of these winners win.
Bruce, you need to write an Oscar handbook, Bruce. You need to write an Oscar handbook, Bruce.
I'm
finding all of this fascinating.
I know we're going to lose Richard any minute.
I want to ask one question.
Yeah,
Bruce,
please,
what happened
go ahead,
one
Richard.
Night in Miami?
It was very well done.
But what happened? Like I went to Hampton House last week down here in Miami. It was,
yeah.
I was, my mind got blown. Like Chaka Khan is going to sing there at the end of the week. They're starting a series, Eric Benet. But I got a private tour and it was just mind blowing to sit in one of those rooms and see what you saw on the screen. And, you know, Black kids took swimming lessons there because it was safe. We got the whole, I left there crying, sobbing, wanting to help them raise money. You know what I mean? But what happened? I thought Regina King was going to run away with it.
Well, she wasn't nominated for director.
Right.
And
but I mean, not even nominated. I guess that's what I mean.
Was the picture nominated? I don't remember if the picture was nominated. I think there
that's
was
why they let her open the show.
Kind of a BLM fatigue.
Oh, really?
They went for Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah.
Right.
And they got behind that, exactly.
And I think that a lot of the people confused it. I mean, the one reporter literally confused it when at backstage afterwards when she asked Kaluuya what it was like to work with Regina King.
Oh, that was ridiculous. That's so uninformed.
I think that probably is it in a nutshell, is that they went for the other BLM movie.
The other Black movie.
Whereas, do you read everything the morning after?
The what?
Do you read everything the morning after the roundups and everything?
I do, actually.
That's a whole day's work,
isn't it? To see what, you know, because generally if I'm there and on the scene and involved, I like to read to see what they think happened as opposed to what I know happened. And here I wasn't there, but I knew what happened.
You guys, I do have to jump off. Richard, Billy, thank you for inviting me.
So Johnny great Bochoff, to see
you. Know how much I love you. Bruce, you're just a wealth. I'm going to call you personally, privately.
Richard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm so sorry to have to jump off. I'm very happy to be here.
Let's never go to Green Book again. It's gone forever.
So, all right, we got rid of him. So... I love the Green Book
TV series.
The musical, actually.
The musical. The Entertainer, Drive.
I actually just saw Richard 2 weeks ago in Florida. We were at Marilyn May. So, see, life goes on for some of us.
Hers, my God. She's incredible.
I know. She's crazy. So,
I'm doing a concert.
Exactly. I'm curious, Bruce, because now we've got really like three distinct points of view in age groups. There's this discussion about Colton Underwood, the bat from The Bachelor, coming out, and should he be monetizing being gay? And by the way, Bruce, and I know people who have monetized being gay.
Why not? Didn't hurt Chaz Bono.
Well, is that really a good thing, bad thing, or why not? Because we have the Real Housewives.
Why not? I mean, it's. I have my theory about Colton Underwood is
Please.
People are mad at him because he's young and he's pretty.
Yeah,
and he's presumed to be shallow because he was on The Bachelor, right. And he's not allowed to make any money off of it. Lance Bass can make money off of it. That's okay.
Well, he wasn't as pretty.
Yeah, I know. But,
I mean, well, I love Lance. He got a lot prettier once he came out.
But he was never, Lance Bass was never selling himself that way. He was a dancer. He was a rock. He was a pop star in a group. So, but I think it's a cynical view that this guy isn't allowed
Thank you.
Money off of his truth. I mean, it's painful enough. Everybody says, oh, it's so painful when they come out. Yeah, it is. So fuck you. Let him come out the way he's going to come out. And if he can make some money on the side to perhaps compensate for what he's not going to make, which is in the great tradition of Me Too settlements, where women would take the money because they thought they would never get hired again if it came out, if they won, you know, or any of those things, like Valerie Harper never getting a show after she sued
Ed. Right.
And that kind of, and Raquel never getting some, not getting any movies after she sued MGM. So the idea is let him come out, let him make his money off of it, and move on. Find somebody else.
Johnny, as a young gay man, how do you feel about it?
Hey, we used to talk, this reminds me of, not the same thing, but I remember when Obama was saying that he was going to support queer rights. And mm-hmm. The girls and I were talking, and some of the girls were like, well, this is ridiculous, because if you looked at his policies, he actually was against it, and now he's flip-flopping. And I was like, okay, hold on one second. Let's just hold the tape. Is there a world where maybe he said he wasn't about it so that he could get elected, so that he could actually do the right thing? Is there a possibility?
Sure.
Now, also, is there also not a world in which, like, maybe he wasn't about it? And maybe he's still not about it, but it's the right thing to do. It's what he needs to do as the president. And he's going to do it to get the votes, to get the numbers, and to do the right thing. But he's not personally about it. That's okay, too, because we're getting the rights, people.
Why? On no other show will you hear Colton Underwood compared to Barack Obama.
I hope I don't get red for filth for that one. But I mean, it's a thing of, like, everybody wants to play this, like, kind of hypothesis. You know, like, well, why is he really doing it? I'm like,
it's a gig, right, Bruce? Is it a gig?
Is what a gig?
Is him doing a Netflix show by coming out? I mean, that's what he does. He's doing a reality show.
I don't know what the chronology was, if he got a show about being a bachelor or if he got a show about being gay. I've not understood.
Yeah, my understanding is that he got the show because he was coming out, but they asked him not to announce it until the show was in production so they could chronicle his coming out process. Now, who went to whom, I don't know. I guess that would be interesting.
I mean, the girls get mad at anything. You got it. The girls, like the Oscars, you can never win, and the girls are going to get mad at everything, you know?
Well,
the unfortunate thing is that on both the right and the left, there are mouth breathers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there ain't no cure for stupid.
Is there more of a backlash?
We're in a narcissistic age where anything you think is viable.
Yeah. Well, is there?
Nobody says to Woody Allen, "You can't make that movie." He makes.
Well, people have.
He shoots his first step, but not for that reason.
No, right.
But I mean, he was the only auteur who could actually shoot whatever he wanted to shoot, and sometimes he shouldn't have done, shot. But that my point is that
people say they
shouldn't that they shouldn't say what?
I said, you remember A Tall Dark Stranger? That was a dud.
I know that was one of them. That was pretty.
I'll say though, he doesn't have that many. I actually wanted to be.
Did you sit through Rainy Day in New York?
I did. It was hilariously bad.
Oh, I just thought to myself, my God, who thought Timothy Chalamet could be that bad?
Well he's playing Woody Allen, which is a
and
huge.
Badly.
And Woody Allen does that. He had John Cryer, not John
Cusack.
John Cusack.
Who was the best of the young Woody Allens?
Playing him. I mean, he always has the most.
Yeah, I was going to say, you remember when Rano played him in Celebrity?
Oh, right.
Horrible. Here's Timothy Chalamet playing a kid. Where would a kid pick up that patois, that knowledge, that rhythm?
Lingo.
What I was going to do when it was like. Ooh.
No, yeah.
Where does that kid from the east side of Manhattan who's. A Brahmin.
Let me ask you guys this. Since you're talking about Rainy Day, did you see Rifkin Festival?
I did.
No, was anybody?
I saw it.
I did, yeah.
Well, how'd you see it? Where'd you find it?
Somebody sent me a link. Yeah, same with me.
Because it's not out. You can't Google it. You can't find it.
I'll send you a link, Bruce.
We'll send me
a
link. Baby.
I would love to see it. I see all those movies.
Yeah, no, I do too. And again, I find him such an interesting person. Again, it's sort of, you know, this past year with that terribly skewed documentary, but skewed because he wouldn't take part in it, but I think he would have been screwed either way. I don't think people can separate an artist from the art they create. And well, I have no problem doing that.
I think people can if they're dead. Nobody has a problem with Wagner, right? No one has a problem.
Well, some Jews still do.
Some Jews still do.
But I will say, Wagner.
Wagner.
Oh, but it's interesting because Placido Domingo, using an opera example, Placido Domingo has been persona non grata in opera houses. Pavarotti was far worse, but he's dead. So who's going to criticize him? Ron Howard's making documentaries.
Well, here's so I'm not, you know, I only have a BA in theater performance and generally think about it. I'm no scholar, but something to me, looking at the cancel culture, looking who can be canceled, what can we like, what can we not like, because Woody Allen is still alive and is still making the money off of his films, people don't want to put money in his, at least my generation doesn't want to put money in his pockets. When he dies, everyone's going to go back and watch his movies and talk about what, you know, oh, look at this. What about this?
I never, am I wrong, Bruce? I don't think Woody Allen ever is getting any money in his pockets from his films.
Oh, Billy,
Hey, yeah. I mean, he gets money. He may not get, you know, Batman money, but he gets money.
I just wonder, does Woody Allen putting out a movie change his lifestyle financially every year at all?
I mean, I think that's just getting really, like, really...
I don't know. That's anybody's guess, isn't it?
I think it's just a flippant decision, and no one's really thinking about it. Everyone's just making these decisions, but it's like... And I'm
viscerally.
Like, and you ask, why him and not her? Why this and not that?
I'd like to also point out, why I agree your generation turned off to him. It's not just your generation. I mean, his generation turned off to him.
That's true.
Example is the musical of Bullets Over Broadway, which got very good reviews and was a fun show. And did not sell tickets from day one because women who basically buy theater tickets said, I'm not going to go see anything in reality.
Those
are not 22-year-old women.
Right.
Speaking of cancel culture, we'll end on this, The Talk. So we've had this whole drama about The Talk, and I have to say, and I know people disagree with me, I don't care. Okay. I have been completely on side Sharon Osbourne since day one, because I watched that discussion very carefully, and somehow the big argument was that she got mad and was getting hysterical. And I'm like, if you were being called a racist on live TV, I'd get mad too, when her whole point was not anything racist, but that people should have the right to speak. Right. You don't have to agree with them, but they should have their right to speak. And somehow it spun into something that I don't think it was ever meant to be. Johnny, obviously you disagree with me, so go ahead.
No, I would love to give the floor to Bruce first, if Bruce
Bruce.
Insider knowledge.
Well, you know, she's nuts, Jenner.
Well, she is. Right. No, I will agree with that.
She makes a lot of shit up, but I think that her mistake was, and I don't know what the root of it is, but her mistake was to say, look, he says these things and I don't agree with him. By never saying she disagreed, he was saying she agreed.
Okay.
She's saying, you're calling him a racist and I disagree, but I disagree with what he said. She never said that. Had she said that, it would have been over because she would have been in the clear. But when she didn't say that, it was like they were then free to say to her, well, you're a racist too, if you agree with him.
Well,
that was the basis of it. And then, of course, it got
it devolved.
It became what's really going on in the show.
Well, I think the reason all this happened had nothing to do with on air. It was off air. And if you remember, Miss, you know, my queen, Leah Remini.
Yes, well, now, when I love Leah too.
My hood bust balls from New York, LA, taking down the patriarchy, sis, was like, oh, I'm too hood to be on the show. Like, you know, I'm too ghetto to be on the show. That's
right.
She told me, I'm too hood to be on. And we were like, Leah doesn't lie. Leah's a freedom fighter. She's not lying. Sharon Osbourne is telling women they're too hood to be on the show. So from then on, we were like, side-eyeing Sharon.
And yet people are dropping but that show now has a body count. People are dropping like flies. I expect the show will be off the air by the end of this season.
Oh, which is crazy because it's The View. Oh, no, it's The Talk.
No,
it's not The View. That's the problem.
It's the road company of The View.
Did you see my wig fly off on that?
It's the bus and truck version of The View.
Thank God it's like glued on because I think it would have just...
And it all started with the whole Meghan Markle thing. So let's do it. First off, and maybe I'm crazy, and Johnny, you'll know if I'm crazy. Bruce already knows I'm crazy. Am I the only one that never looked at Meghan Markle and thought, wow, there's a black woman? Like, it never even occurred to me.
You know, you are the only one.
Oh, okay.
The world, we have this, like, one drop spec rule. We're like, but then it gets weird for like South Italians. It gets weird for certain like people from
South American.
You know, it really is. Do you confuse me or not? That's what it seems to be. But because going into the royal family, everybody knew. Oh, Meghan, that was the first thing they said. Black Meghan Markle. Like it was the first thing they said, and I was like, oh wow, okay. Well, maybe you know, maybe her grandmother. You know, who's this? Who cares?
We've met her mother. No, because her mother is a black woman.
I know. But we're Americans. And so we're...
We don't think that way.
Right. We're coming to this from a very American way. And we've always looked over the pond at the royals with a piece of glass in front of us. It's a very... We're not in it. I was talking to my friends out in the UK, and they have a very different relationship and understanding to the royals. And there's a bit of respect there. On both sides, that you have like, yes, they have all these riches and all this stuff, but that the price is freedom. The price is that they don't have a life. The price, it's like if there is a trade off, and so there is like an understanding of that. And Meghan, it's the way it was painted on both sides of the pond, it seemed that she came into the family in a very American way, and
being American,
right? But she came into the royals. In a very American way.
Well, see, I think, Bruce, that is actually the bigger problem. I don't think her being mixed. I think her being American, being a divorcee, being an actress, kind of, was a bigger problem. Bruce,
It was Wallace Simpson all over again.
That's what I thought, too. But we're old.
Being a little bit ambitious. But I would also like to say that, to point out that in England, there's a substantial bunch of people, friends of mine among them, who say, you know, at this point, the monarchy represents the Commonwealth, which we don't ever think about, that Canada, Australia, all these African countries are all part of the Commonwealth. And they felt it was inevitable that somebody from the Commonwealth, translation, not Lily White,
right.
would marry into the royal family. That it would be an American girl who spent time in Canada, I think was what surprised them and, mm-hmm. and gave it a sort of Duchess of Windsor feel to the whole thing.
And because of course, she's not one of us.
Right. And when she became a disruptive element, the way the Duchess of Windsor did, even though she was never in the royal family, when she became a disruptive element, it was like this thing is playing out all over again. And suddenly she became blacker because she was half black. And when the baby came, you know, I mean, when that baby was born and they didn't reveal it for 3 days, you know, they were checking that baby out. It is not a secret. I mean, every other royal baby, they're standing outside the hospital the next day with the bundle. This right. one, 3 days, and mm-hmm. then, oh, the Queen and Philip got to look at the kid, and we took a picture of that.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because Whoopi, your good friend, had said on The View, she said after the Oprah interview, when people brought up what color would the baby be, Whoopi was the one that said, because I don't know, because I'm not in this world, she said, let me tell you something. Every mixed race couple has this conversation. What color, just like you ask, what color will the hair be? Will he have his father's eyes or whatever? Every mixed race, that is a conversation. What color will the baby be? It doesn't necessarily have to infer racism. Right. It's just a conversation point.
Right. By the end of Rosemary's Baby. What about Tom? He has his father's eyes. But he's yellow. Well,
oh, we've brought it back to Roman Polanski. Bruce, you're a craftsman.
I was just going to say.
What can I say?
Well, I guess since we just have a few more minutes, let me just ask this, because this ties it all up in a bow. The idea of gay actors can only be the ones to portray gay characters.
I have a lot to say.
Oh, I thought you might. All right. Other way. I know we're on StreamYard, Bruce. Go ahead, Johnny. Johnny, I'll give you the floor. But let me just say before I give you the floor, I feel that if this becomes a thing, this means that only straight actors can play straight characters because there has to be some uniformity.
No.
But go ahead. You tell me. All right. Go ahead.
No. I'm just going to say no. Because the scale needs to tip, baby. You know, I'm as a queer person, you know, we don't get the same opportunity. We don't. And when a cis male, heterosexual male gets to play gay, he wins an award. And they often get to play. I've only seen one openly gay prior in Angels in America my entire life. One, Michael Urie, and he was the best. Every time we get an incredible role, like Philadelphia, Milk, you know, Angels in America, every time somebody puts heart to paper, a straight guy gets to play it. What do I get to play? The hairdresser, the hooker, the best friend. But when there's a really juicy juice, who gets it? What's his name? Who wins the Tony? He's excellent, but maybe I thought he was better in Death of a Salesman, not Angels in America. I love him. Andrew Garfield, excellent mm-hmm. actor. You know, so I just think that the scale needs to tip a little bit. Just a little bit. Like, we should be just let it tip. And I don't think only straights, only gays, only trans, but right now there is no trans representation, right? So the scale needs to tip. Let the trans actors play themselves.
Bruce, do you think that the way to rectify the problem is to tip the scales in the opposite direction, or is it equalizing it?
How do you tip the scales? You cast somebody who's not as good as somebody else because they're a cocksucker?
No. I don't not when you say not as good, I say cast somebody better who's not maybe not famous. That's the thing. Maybe not.
Well, so now you want
go ahead. Does not exist in the pool that you're working with.
Suppose it does.
I mean, this conversation is anti-art because first of all, it's anti-art because acting is about pretending and making up, and that is the actor's art.
Right.
And when you're saying to an actor, I'm sorry, you cannot play somebody who's not of your sexuality, you're saying that it's anti-art. Now, that's
prudent. I'm saying
at the same time, at the same time, let me finish. At the same time, we are dealing with an acting pool. If in the people, the you don't know who was unavailable, you don't know who passed, you don't know who didn't want to do it for that money, you don't know any of that. All you know is the end result.
Well, that's true.
Extrapolating from that, a whole lot of stuff that doesn't exist. So if there is an, as I say, I don't see casting somebody who is not as good as somebody else because they have the correct sexual identity. That is anti-art.
Well, I'm curious if, you know, if James Franco were up for a gay role and then we found out he had slept with men in the past, would that make it better?
No, I think that's nickel and diming it. And I think
that's anti-art.
Well, that's the point.
I don't agree that it's anti-art because I think the problem is the pool needs to get bigger. And I know it's a financial game. This is a business. We got to make money. That's the point.
Right.
But I'm not going to sign off that Andrew Garfield was the best choice for Pryor in Angels in America. No. He wasn't.
But Johnny, you have no knowledge of who else was in the running.
That's true.
Is everything going to be Scarlett O'Hara? We're going to have a nationwide cast to see who was the best person?
No, but I think that there's quite a few, really good guys, but
you haven't been there and you haven't seen how these things are done. You haven't seen what's available out there. You are assuming that there is somebody brilliant out there, undiscovered.
Because I said Michael Yeager, who's also a very good actor, he was wonderful. And if you didn't see him in the play, I hope you get to see him in the part. He was wonderful. There's a handful of great actors out there.
But you don't know who was available and interested and wanting to do it. That is my point. You can't make a blanket condemnation of Andrew Garfield and say that there had to be somebody better who was gay. There didn't have to be somebody better who was gay. If there was, why he would have been in the part?
No, because Andrew Garfield does sell tickets. I see they're trying to bring
that is a factor.
Of course.
I see that. I just think that the pool needs to get a little
bigger. I saw the Boys in the Band, Ryan Murphy's version. It didn't do anything for me that everybody in that picture is a bottom. It didn't do anything. I didn't.
Well, there was one top.
It wasn't played better because everybody was coming from their own homosexual experience.
No, and Bruce, I think that there's very many heterosexuals that have given transcendent performances as homosexuals. Very many of them. I'm just saying, for you to say that you can be gay and it's not an issue to be an actor and be openly gay, that's...
Well, nobody has said that.
I didn't say that.
Nobody
put words in my mouth.
I'd like to put things in your mouth, but not that.
I'm available, but not words.
This has gotten very gay.
But you got other things you can put in my mouth, but not words. I didn't say that.
All right, so then I retract. But there is this kind of thing. I'm telling you that there is. As someone who's in the field, in the front lines, in that capacity, I mean, it's they.
Johnny, have you ever been in the position of casting something?
That's like a trick question. Yes, but no, but yes. Not something
because then you know what it's about. It's not about sexuality. It is about talent and
judging the performance,
and also commercial.
Right, but I'm not going to put words in your mouth. But I know it's about talent. But it's almost as if saying that there are no talented gay people to do it because we only see straight people do it.
They're not saying that. You're not hearing me. There are no people in that particular instance. For that particular role, at that particular time, for that particular pay scale, for that particular director, these are all particulars that work into the thing. You can't make a blanket generalization. Each one of these things is a decision into and of itself. And it is naive and amateurish to make a blanket generalization that the world is biased.
Because
when you're actually in the driver's seat, you discover what the conditions are, and they are not blanket, and they are not general.
I take your lashings with pride and a smile on my face. I'm just going to tell you, they didn't look hard enough. I don't believe they looked hard enough.
I would just like to wrap it up. I'd like to wrap it up with one point, which is that a lot of times these decisions are made with box office returns in mind to afford making the project in the first place. And sometimes you cannot get a film like Philadelphia made if you don't have Tom Hanks and Antonio Banderas in it. And that's unfortunate. Barbara Streisand tried for how many years to make The Normal Heart and apparently couldn't do it.
It's true.
Well,
that's
a particular issue. She wanted to make a Barbara Streisand picture.
Right.
And make it about the doctor.
Where the lady in the wheelchair was the lead.
I know.
And had great nails. Boys, I adore both of you. No. I want to thank you for doing this.
I adore you both so much.
I'm sorry, I get very theatrical. I'm not mad or angry. I get very theatrical when I'm talking about
this. To go fuck myself any day of the week.
I'm holding you to what things you're putting in my mouth.
I know Bruce's preferences. He's not lying. I want to thank you, but I just want to look at what the comments are. Bruce, we've heard from Howard Andrews, whose birthday is next week, who sent his love.
Right.
But Howard did have an interesting point. Why is everybody's name in caps on the first letter except for Bruce? That's discrimination. I will point out everybody gets to type their own name. And if Bruce wants to pull an E. Cummings, he can do whatever he
wants. I studied under E. Cummings, and I'm lazy.
Thank you. Somebody said, I thought School Days with Glenn Close. So I think he means to say I saw it. So thank you for that. That is Scott Townsend, our good friend Scott Townsend, the premier Cher impersonator, if we don't count the other Cher impersonators.
We don't count Cher.
On that note, thank you, boys. I want to thank you both for doing this. This was fun. I really liked this. I like people who are very passionate.
We've met a bunch of times because I'm just like a creeper fan. I just like say hi to you in the street when I was a kid, but I adore you. And I hope next time I run into you, you remember me.
All right. Are you out here? Or are you in New York?
No, I'm in New York right now.
Okay.
But he's bi-coastal. He's there sometimes.
Yeah, but Bruce, okay. I'm coming for you, baby. We got to have a girls' night.
All right. Here I am.
We will do this in person. And until then, we'll do it again. Thank you both. Bruce Valanche, Johnny Beauchamp, we'll see you soon. Thank you.
You're out. Take care.
Bye, guys. Oh, my God. What a combustible panel. Thank you for watching Billy Masters Live. Next week, we continue the... Johnny, if you stay there, I'll say goodbye to you in a minute. Next week, we continue the theatrics. We have... esteemed critic and poison pen writer Michael Riedel is going to be here discussing his new book about Broadway, and Eddie Shapiro will also be here discussing his new book about Broadway. So next week's going to be a very Broadway heavy show. Thank you for watching. I have been Billy Masters Live. I will continue to be Billy Masters. And just remember, when we're here, we're live. Bye, guys. Have a good weekend.